Hey, what's going on, folks? Ty here, Bench Clear Media. Hope you're doing well. So for those that did not get the chance to support and watch all of the insanely good content for the Hobbypalooza this weekend, I highly recommend you go back and do that. Go to thehobbypalooza.com for the full schedule and all of the great content creators that put out hour-long live episodes throughout the weekend. It was a blast. And being a part of the chat rooms and just interacting with folks all weekend was really was just a good old time. But I had the pleasure of having a couple sessions this weekend. And one of them I posted a couple days ago was my round table with some card shop owners, PJ from Collectible Kings and Marcel from Legacy, previously Legacy, and now the Awesome Card Shop in Las Vegas. And definitely recommend you go back and listen to that. That was the past episode I just put out. The episode that I'm posting now is a roundtable, a CEO roundtable that I had with Scott, CEO of Starstock, and Ezra, the CEO of Collectible. Both the gentlemen who have been on my show in the past. I co-hosted it with Chris, owner of Top Shelf Cards in Chicago and Top Shelf Breaks. And we just had a good time talking about just the industry. The first, I would say, 20 minutes or so is kind of shooting the breeze, talking a little bit about what's happening at both of their respective companies. And then the last half really was all about just what they're seeing from a hiring perspective, what they're seeing from kind of the trajectory of the hobby, the fundamentals of the hobby. And I thought it was really insightful. And you get guys that are seeing things from a different perspective than a lot of us collectors, because they're talking to a lot of the organizations and folks that are pouring money into the hobby. And so getting that perspective, I think, is important. So hopefully that's helpful to you. Listen to the whole thing, but definitely the back half of it, which I think is was definitely some of the more insightful content that that I've had in the last few episodes. So anyway, enjoy that. Go check out thehobbypalooza.com. For your full-on schedule. You can see the videos for each and every episode from all the content creators throughout the weekend, and enjoy this conversation. All right, we are live. Hope you guys are doing well. It has been a long weekend of the Hobbypalooza as we've gone from show to show. I hope everyone that's been watching has had a great time. There's been a lot of memorable moments. I can't wait to talk about it in the recap show late this evening, but I am honored to have a couple awesome guests on today and a great co-host. Chris, how are you doing?
What's up, Ty, man? Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you too. For those that don't know Chris, shame on you. You should know Chris. Chris runs Top Shelf Breaks and has a great card shop in Chicago, which I think a lot of people will visit during the National. You think so? You hope so?
I hope so. They'll come here when they're here. And yeah, I'm sure we'll see. I'm sure there's going to be some Googling going on when they're here at the National. So
that's right. We'll talk about that here in a second. Yeah. But I want to bring in our two guests. So we're going to do a little CEO roundtable. A couple guests that I've had on, obviously a couple major presences in the hobby with Ezra from Collectible and Scott from Starstock. And we thought it'd be good just to open up the forum and let folks ask questions to them and have a good old time. It's a Sunday evening. Some of us have already started drinking choice adult beverages. I'm sure Ezra has, because he's on a beach somewhere. Scott's in the office. Maybe he's not drinking yet. I don't know. Chris is drinking. Is that Pepsi? You're a Pepsi guy?
No, I've been off the Pepsi for a year and a half, brother. That's just Mio drops in water.
Okay. Nice. Ezra, Scott, how you both doing?
What's up? Doing how are great. You guys?
How are you guys? Thanks for having us on.
Welcome. Welcome.
You already got a question there. Is that your shop, Chris? I'm assuming it is behind you.
Oh, I got to turn comments on. That is my shop. That is the latest view of the shop. Yes, correct. We're in Elgin, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. That's from the front looking back to the shop. Nice. That's what that is. Wow. Yeah.
You opened a year ago, right? And every week, it's like it transitions even more. Yeah,
it's crazy. This is the new location. We were in the other place down the road for two years. And so I kind of grew out of that spot. It was kind of a little boutique place inside of a commercial building, but it was off the beaten path a little bit. And then this place came to me about a year ago. I started thinking about leaving. And I went to get my oil done one day and saw this place for lease. And that's it. That's how it happened. If I wouldn't have gotten an oil change that day, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. So
let there be a lesson.
That's how things work.
Of your car.
Follow the universe.
Your office is slightly smaller than Scott's behind him.
Oh yeah, he's in a warehouse, I think.
You're finally in the new building, huh? How's it going over there, Scott?
Oh, it's going well. Yeah, we moved in here 2 months ago. A lot more space. So it's been good. We've been excited about it. A lot of work to kind of get it looking like how we want it to look like. You know, a lot of, you know, blank white walls and whatnot, but it's going to be a fun few months kind of decorating it out with, been buying a bunch of like uncut sheets to put on the walls and things like that. So Chris might need to get you over here and kind of take what you've done over there and kind of bring
some. I do like that. I'm not going to lie. The design element is a fun thing for me to do and fill in the walls, but Fathead is your friend. Just as a side note, they help a lot, fill stuff out. Where are you located, Scott? What city are you in?
We're in Mamaroneck, New York. So okay. In Westchester. Ezra knows. Ezra's in the area. So starts knocking collectible or kind of in the same, you know, 30-minute.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Well, that worked. You guys do a lot of lunches together? Dinners? Power lunches?
We should.
We'll get those started shortly.
Yeah, you're gonna be a little busy, Ezra. We'll
make that happen.
Well, let's clear the air then with your second child coming. So your wife is due on the 18th, right? Is that what I heard?
She is due on the 28th, which has to coincide with the first day, I believe, of the Nationals officially. So I was telling the guys backstage that I've been going back and forth with her for a long time because obviously, you know, it's a huge event for collectible. It's a huge event for the industry and for the hobby. I very much want to be there. But I also have to be a good dad and good husband, of course. So the deal that I've struck is that if the baby is born before or on July 18th, which is exactly 1 week from today, I will be at the Nationals. I don't know for how long, but I will be there for at least a day. If the baby is born after that, I think I'm out of luck. So if you see me, I hope that I'm a new father of two. I have a two-year-old son at the moment, Eli, and we're expecting another boy.
All right, so I'm gonna let folks comment on this, fellow dads here. But this is what we did for our first, and there was our first was due on the day after Christmas, and so my wife and I are like, let's try all these wives' tales and see if we can get this thing to work. And so we take this castor oil, we put it in our orange juice, and. Well, I didn't even Google it like I should have. It was just kind of like, I'll dump a bunch in there and like, whatever, it's going to be fine. She drinks this orange juice and literally within the hour, we're at the hospital.
Wow.
It's like it greased the skids and all of a sudden things started happening. We had the baby Christmas Eve.
It's a good tip, Ty.
It's good tip. Yeah. So, I mean, I would read the instructions on how to do it. Don't dump the whole bottle in.
Yeah. Ezra's going to be there on, what was it? The 17th at 11:30 PM. With the castor oil in hand to meet that 18th deadline.
Yeah. Well, if you do it soon, you might be able to swing 2 days at National.
You're right.
Maybe the 13th or 14th.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Well, you're full term already. So, right? All bets are off.
We are. Yep. Exactly.
Nice. All right. So, real quick thoughts on Ronald Acuna going down. How much does that affect the hobby from an MLB perspective? Big? Blip?
Affects us. I mean, we, you know, one of our live offerings, actually, we've never experienced this at Collectible with a live offering of a player who gets a season ending injury. So our basket, I think there's about a third of it left open, and Acuna, you know, he's out for the year. So how that affects demand, if investors and collectors are willing to look past the hopefully short term injury, and but we'll see. You know, I think he's obviously an incredibly exciting player. He's been an incredibly collectible player in baseball, and we wish for a speedy recovery for him.
Yeah,
definitely.
What are you seeing, Scott? You get to see real time what happens.
Yeah, I mean it sucks, obviously, but unfortunately, it's just part of the business that we're in, right? So these things happen, and it sucks, especially such an exciting player, very collectible, as Ezra said, but. Hopefully, I mean, you know, hopefully it will bring opportunity in 6 to 8 months from now when he's making his recovery and we're, you know, getting ready for next season. And I'm sure, you know, the good news is most people these days recover pretty well from these ACL injuries. I think it's ACL, right?
Yeah,
ACL.
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, hopefully he's back, you know, by the beginning of next season and he's doing fine.
Yeah, Topps vintage there with a question, and I think it's a good parlay. I mean, how do you think that affects young stars' value? And my response to that is, I mean, for those that didn't take advantage of getting Ohtani last year when he was hurt, are regretting every minute of that. You know, it's an opportunity to buy for sure. 5 months in,
I mean, I would point to there were some devastating injuries. If you remember when Fernando went down towards the end of the season, and then you know, I'm a big football fan and collector, and that's kind of the centerpiece of TSB was when Joe Burrow went down. It's almost unbelievable that these big names, these rookies, these, you know, second, third year players that are just driving not only our hobby, but driving the sport nationwide and just everything involved with them. And they go down and it seems like that's it. Joe Burrow's out. Are you serious? And then here he comes back. And this is the season now that we're pulling for Joe Burrow. Fernando seems to be fine, when we know this year. So it just, like you said, Scott, it just sucks, the timing, and it's a pit in your stomach and the all excitement and people put money into it and time. And then they go down, kind of got to shift it to something else, to another player is probably what happens there. They go to the next guy, which I don't know who that would be, but kind of just goes to the next guy and you wait till Acuña comes back next season.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, so one that's interesting, and I actually own a bunch of his cards because I'm a Giants fan, but Saquon's coming back this year. And, you know, he was a dynamic athlete. Yes. That was, you know, as quick and strong as they come. And so we'll see how he recovers from his ACL injury.
Good example. Yep. That's
and,
it.
You know, now's probably, you know, you probably have 6-8 weeks left to buy up some of the Saquon cards before the season starts.
Mm-hmm. I saw his PSA 10 rookies dip below 200, which is insane to me.
I heard you guys talking about that today, Ty. Yeah, I went and bought them all up already per your conversation a couple hours earlier. So it's like 5 left now.
Oh, good. Nice work. Yeah. Nice work. Daniel Jones, is he going to be the quarterback at the end of the season, or is it what's going on there?
So. I think so. I hope so. I mean,
not confident.
Yeah, no, Scott, I mean, being honest with us here.
Got some weapons finally, right?
I mean, friends watching.
He finally has playmakers around him. If there's if there's ever, you know, a year where he should blossom, or he's in a position to blossom, it's now. He's got Galloway, he's got Ingram. So, you know, we'll see.
Sterling still there?
Yeah. The good news is, like, if we'll know what I'm excited about, and I'm bullish on him, but the good news is, like, at the end of the season, we're gonna know. Like, he's either gonna be our quarterback or he's not. And so I'm excited about that, but I'm pretty confident in him actually. I think he'll have a good year.
Nice. All right, so let's talk about the National real quick. And Star Stock's going to have a presence there. Collectible, I don't know how you're going to be kind of spread out there, if you have a booth or not, but maybe talk real quick about what people can expect, where they can find you guys, and what your expectations are. Scott, it sounds like this is your first National, so this is going to be it's going to be fun for you regardless.
Yeah, well, I wasn't able to make it a few years ago. And then last year got canceled, obviously. And so this will be my first time. I'm really excited. We have a booth in the Breaking Pavilion. So we will be there. We'll be bringing our team. We'll be doing card breaks. We'll be accepting submissions directly there as well. So you can come drop off your cards. You know, we'll be doing giveaways, some other fun stuff. So really excited. It's going to be a blast. Like, I'm excited to be there and to, like, work for Star Stock there, but I'm probably more excited to just go as, like, my own card collector and just have fun and walk around and buy cards and chat with people and whatnot. So it's going to be a good time.
How many folks are you sending?
We'll go with, like, I think 6 or 7.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
Good presence.
Yeah, it's going to be solid.
What about you, Ezra? What are you guys doing?
We've got some plans, yeah, for sure. So we have a booth in the corporate section. I believe we're going to send down, I think, 8 or 9 of our employees. We also have
we're going 8 or 9 too now.
Exactly. We are doing some really cool things, actually. We are co-presenting a party, actually, I believe, on Thursday night with DraftKings. So that's going to be a big one. And then we are also doing what's called the Chairman's Dinner on Friday night, and I believe we have a Saturday off-site activation as well. In addition, we're going to be running a live IPO directly from the Nationals from our corporate booth. We'll be doing a lot of giveaways. We also have a space at the main stage where we're going to be running a panel effectively, which is, I believe the topic of the panel is new entrants, how the new entrants of the hobby are going to lift the hobby to heights that the hobby hopefully has never seen before. So we're going to have a pretty cool presence at the Nationals. Again, I hope that I'm able to be there as well. But if I'm not there, we're going to have, you know, a lot of our amazing team there, and it's going to be an amazing event. It really will be.
The National has come a long way. The National has come a long way. This is my this will be my seventh one. 2014, I was kind of thrust into it because it was here in Chicago. And Ty, we probably met, believe it or not, back during those days.
Yeah,
where it was just literally, you know, one of the target tables with not even a cover over the top. You were just kind of hanging out, running your breaks. And now to, you know, those names you guys are talking about that are going to be there in the presence, man, that has come a long way fast, quickly.
One other quick plug for Collectible. We are actually our secondary market, right? So our secondary market really is the first sort of continuous, almost like stock market, similar to Scott's, but, you know, more sort of a regulated stock market hour type structure. We're going to be opening trading for the iconic 1959-60 full uniform rookie Wilt Chamberlain. It's going to be on display there. One of the most iconic jerseys probably in history. Wow. You know, it's been called the Holy Grail of basketball uniforms. We're going to have that at the Nationals along with a couple of our other assets, but we're going to open up the first day of secondary market trading for that Chamberlain uniform directly at the Nationals.
Yeah. Ty, do you think we should have him just briefly, real quickly, identify, you know, where you're at and what you guys do in a nutshell with Collectible and Star Stock real quick?
Sure. Yeah. I think most people know, but let's do it.
They do. They do.
And Chris, you probably don't even know
what they do.
Come on, man.
Of course I
do. I've been telling you to get in Star Stock for years.
Years. You have. Well, I bought up all the Saquons today, and I just got into Star Stock, so we're good. Thank you.
That's right. No, that's a good point. Once you get the 30-second kind of what you guys do, Ezra, you can kick it off with Collectible and Scott.
Sure. Yeah, we are what's called a fractional ownership platform, right? So effectively, we source, you know, really iconic assets. Usually, minimum value that we put on the platform is $15,000 all the way up into the millions. And we IPO them, right? So we create little mini companies out of them, and then we sell shares of those assets to the public. The mission really is to take the high end of the market, the real blue chips, the investment pieces, the holy grails, and make them affordable for collectors and investors of all income brackets all across the country. So a prime example of that is that Wilt Chamberlain jersey. We IPO'd that for $1.27 million, fully funded to over 1,000 unique investors in about 1 hour's time, right? So one of the most iconic, honestly, a museum quality Hall of Fame caliber jersey is now co-owned by over 1,000 collectors through Collectible.
Love that. So you can't get any more, right? So that's done. That's fully funded and that's it, right?
Is that so? Right. So our process is we IPO them, right? So we take them public. And once it's funded, there's a 60-day lockup period. So you're not able to, to trade your shares, to buy more, to sell your interest for 60 days. After 60 days, it trades like the stock market effectively. So, you know, 5 days a week during stock market hours, you can buy and sell shares of Wilt Chamberlain, just like you can buy and sell shares of Facebook on the public markets.
Love it. I really do.
No, I can speak from experience. Since you guys started, being able to participate in cards that I normally wouldn't have had access to has been a blast. Like even my boys and I, we look at the portfolio I have now, just different cards, LeBron James rookies, Mickey Mantle stuff. You know, we have that portfolio of Luka, Zion. We love it. We love it. So it's been really fun. Now that we can trade it, it's been more fun.
I see wax too, by the way, which I love, you know, wax products.
Some wax also.
Yeah, that's my world there. So I'll be excited to learn more about that.
Fantastic.
Yeah. We'll get to some of these questions here in a second, guys. But Scott, go ahead and tell us a little bit about what Star Stock does for those that don't know.
Yeah. You know, we're building essentially a marketplace that allows people to trade with as little friction as possible. So our focus there is really on enabling people to buy and sell cards instantly, and doing them at scale as well. So our model is a little bit different. Every card you see on our site is actually sitting in a vault, which enables people to trade the cards without shipping them if they don't want to. You can get the card shipped out at any time. But it allows people to basically take ownership of a card 1 second after they click the confirm button, without needing to wait for the card to show up in the mail. And so our vision's always been to, take areas of the hobby that we thought there were a lot of pain points on and to try to innovate there. And so we actually just launched a card breaking about 10 days ago or so. I'm just trying to put our own little spin on that as well. And so it's kind of what we're doing. Trying to innovate and create new ways for people to engage with buying and selling in the hobby.
I'm just amazed by the software that you all have to run these websites and to keep track of everything. It's like that's probably a big portion of running these businesses is the amount of software and technology you need to track all this and do it properly and correctly too. I can't imagine. So congrats to you guys for doing that. That's a big part of it.
All right. Looks like John's met your team, Scott, Philly show. Got some props there.
Oh, love to hear that. Yeah, they're great. We have, we've been going to a lot of events recently. So we have like a team of, I'd say 3 to 5 people, and we schedule out all the events and we try to get to about 2 or 3 a month if we can. They're tons of fun. I've been to a couple of them, and it's just like, it's so much fun being in a huge room with thousands of other people that all share the same passion. So appreciate that, John.
Beautiful. All right, let's take a few questions and then we'll shift to the just the overall feel of the market right now. First one's for you, Ezra. Can you talk about how you set IPO prices, your cost plus small margin, current comps?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, we have about four or five experts right now on hand who are experts in their particular market segment, and we're looking for things that we believe have long term potential to appreciate, things that are historically and culturally relevant, and ones that typically are of underlying iconic athletes, right? The iconic athletes have tended historically to do better over long periods of time, and that's seems to be what the investor appetite is on the platform. Yeah, I mean, we look at everything. I mean, we're very data driven in our approach. Obviously, comps is a big one. Some of our items, unfortunately, don't really have any comps. I mean, you're looking at real one of one grail items. For that, it's as much sort of our intel about where the public and private markets are, right? When certain items we believe will come up again, right? The growth rates of different players and different segments of the industry, ones that we think are undervalued, right? I mean, we're always looking to prioritize, just sourcing effectively and really iconic stuff. Again, that the average collector just, really wouldn't have the ability to either source themselves, or even if they could find it, they would not be able to afford it, right? So, stuff that the average collector could not afford, could not locate, could not source. Otherwise, we want to provide them with that opportunity.
So in a market like this, right, where you see prices, I mean, we've seen some cards drop 30%, 40% in 60 days. When you set the IPO price, do you move it down when you see the market drop in a certain period?
Yeah. We've had a couple cases recently where we've had a couple, live IPOs or ones that were pending where the market just dropped. And, the price that we set prior to is just not sort of at the market, right? So we've had to drop a couple items from what we were planning on offering to the public. I mean, we try to bring items to the public at fair prices. Obviously, there is no perfect valuation for anything, of course, but we try to be as fair to both the consigners and to the investors as we possibly can.
Yeah, that makes sense. I want to answer this question because Global Sports Card Investors brought it up a couple times, and I'll let Scott kind of talk on this. So he was asking about an international sports card show, if that would be kind of more fitting going forward with how global international sports card industry is. Scott, you guys have started to find ways to bridge the gap with international collectors to a certain extent. What's your viewpoint on kind of the international card community and how you as StarStock can help bring them in?
Yeah. I think that, first off, we have tons of international customers and users on our site, which is super exciting. In a lot of places that you, I guess most people that don't, I guess, know much about the market would never expect. Canada is you know, a common one, but like Australia is probably our third or fourth biggest country. You know, on the site, we have thousands of users from Australia and Asia and Philippines, you know, all sorts of different places, South America, which is really cool. You know, obviously our model feeds in well for international collectors. We basically level the playing field for them. They're able to, you know, buy and sell cards without having to pay the really, you know, high fees and shipping rates to get cards shipped out internationally. We actually have a few employees that are international. And so I know firsthand how annoying it can get at times, you know, when I've, you know, tried to buy them product or wax to ship overseas so they can, you know, open some cards at the office. I'd say like 9 out of 10 people that I try to buy product off of won't even ship internationally. So, you know, they're playing in a different playing field than people that are, you know, fortunate to be here and, you know, collecting in the US. But I think, you know, what we've seen on our end is that it's just growing tremendously. Every single week, every single month, you know, more international collectors on our site. We're super appreciative of it as well. And I think, you know, the sky's the limit. Obviously, you know, the three or four major sports here in the US are growing internationally as well. You know, basketball, which is probably the biggest sport on our site, is just growing at crazy rates internationally. And so I don't see it slowing down in terms of collectors. I think we'll continue to see that over the next few years.
Yeah. Chris, do you see that kind of flow into your world on the break side? Are you seeing a more higher?
I have a funny note. My first customer ever when we started TSB, I was so excited an order came through. And it turns out that he was in Australia. And I thought, well, this is going to be a long haul. But I've noticed recently, meaning within the last 6 to 8 months, I've noticed orders coming in from Japan, like literally from Japan. And they're buying in a lot of baseball breaks, mostly, that I've noticed. I know it may be NBA focused over in that region. But I've seen it in Japan has been a recent surge. And also in the UK. So I was going to ask if you saw specifics with sport internationally, percentage wise, how that shaked out. I'm guessing NBA would probably be big over in Europe and the Asian markets, probably.
Yeah. NBA is probably the biggest sport for our international customers, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And Ezra, you guys, I know with SEC and all that stuff, you weren't selling, making it available to international communities yet. Is that changing?
Are you there yet? We are working as hard as we possibly can. You'd be shocked at how complicated.
Oh man!
You know, when you're dealing with securities law. I mean, we're trying to sell securities is ultimately what we're trying to do. And every country, even provinces within different countries, have different rules and regulations. Actually, Canada, surprisingly, although it would seem to be, you know, sort of a natural neighbor and partner of ours since they're so geographically close, is actually one of the most difficult countries to serve demand. Their securities laws are actually very different than ours. So, you know, we're relatively close with being able to service Europe. I hope that that's, you know, I never want to make a promise, but yeah, I think it's possible that that's, you know, more near term. Canada, we're plugging away. We're trying to be as creative as we possibly can. It's challenging for us right now. Australia too, you know, has been a big market. It's funny, you know, while we can't service international demand, we feel it because they you know, will contact us in social media, or they'll call into our support desk, or their email into our support, you know, a box. And there's demand all across the world. Even Guam, we've gotten emails from Guam, which I actually wasn't sure if it was actually a real place. So, you know, you always hear the joke about, okay, I wasn't sure if Guam's actually a real place. Apparently it is. So, you know, we're seeing it all across the world. And as soon as it's regulatorily possible and legally possible, we're excited to be in all those markets.
Nice. That'll be exciting. Melbourne, Australia, sports card investor. It's coming to you soon. That's interesting about Canada. I hear that all the time too. And I now live about 45 minutes from Canada, and it's like
Canada's tough. Very tough. So the only way, you know, this is probably a little too highbrow, but if we establish a broker dealer presence, right? So a broker dealer is a financial institution which really sort of facilitates transactions on the financial markets. If we establish a physical broker-dealer footprint in Canada, we're able to do that. So we're in the process right now of establishing a U.S. broker-dealer. We're then going to take an onset into Canada, but again, it's just going to take time for us.
Got it. Makes sense. All right. So a question for both of you guys, because you've been doing this long enough now, companies are established and obviously there's lots of growth opportunities, but if you were to point at the one thing that you think is the hardest to crack into inside the hobby, what would you say it's been? And Scott, you've got all kinds of things going now that you got breaks and wax and singles. What part of the market is most difficult for you guys to kind of figure out and crack into?
That's a good question.
And Chris, you can comment on it too. Sorry, go ahead, Scott.
You know, I'd say for us, you know, at first it was just like getting people to trust us to send their cards in, you know, which is really tough. You know, some people spend years or decades building their collection, and to put them all or put a good portion of them into a box and send them, you know, to the Star Stock vault was nerve-wracking for a lot of people. And so I'd say, you know, in the first few months, it was just like building that trust with the community was probably the toughest part for us to crack. But I think once we were able to do it, we were able to build some momentum and you know, now we get tons of submissions every single day. And so it's, you know, that's been very exciting to see. I'd say, you know, from another standpoint, you know, we do like a light grading or a scoring system on our raw cards that we get. I'd say that's like a difficult part of what we do. You know, it's something that we're tracking really, really closely, our ratio of A's to B's to C's, how that affects the marketplace, how that affects, you know, our customer experience. And so I'd say that's another area of our business that's, you know, that we are 24/7 every, you know, no matter what month, week, day of the year it is, we are very, very closely monitoring that aspect of our business.
Got it. Yeah. Ezra, what do you think?
Yeah. You know, I think Scott nailed it, right? I mean, I think the thing for us really probably has been trust and education around what exactly is fractional ownership and why should I trust you with my information, my data. And, you know, it's a little bit of a different ballgame for us, obviously, because we are regulated. We do have to collect a lot of information to open up a brokerage account. You're effectively opening up a brokerage account, same way you'd open up a Robinhood account or Fidelity or a Schwab account, right? So it's that trust factor. I think, you know, as it relates to what part of the market, I mean, I've been thrilled with our ability to consign some of the best of the best of the best. I mean, I think you've seen it with the Chamberlain, you've seen it with some of the Mantle stuff we put up, you've seen it with the Babe Ruth. I mean, our network and our relationships and our sourcing abilities are fantastic. It's really just sort of teaching people what fractional ownership is, why they should consider it. And that trust factor, I think, for a young company, especially in a company that operates in such a regulated environment that requires so much information, that's probably just an ongoing challenge that we knew we were going to have to face and get over. And it's something that certainly has proven to be true.
That's interesting. Chris, this has me thinking back. You and I did an interview, I don't know, probably 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And I was asking you about building your business. We got off on this tangent about just the importance of building trust and how hard it is to build trust in the hobby. And it's got me thinking about you guys, Scott and Ezra. When you think about building trust in the community, what is it you think that you have to focus on the most? And I gravitate towards like over communication, like communicate, communicate, communicate. What have you guys kind of learned as running your companies as little secrets to building kind of trust in the hobby?
Well, I mean, I was thinking as they were talking, Ty, I was thinking about the same thing you were a couple of years ago when we had conversation. For me, and I think everyone else, it is about timing. There's no perfect business. There's going to be errors. There's going to be things that happen. And it is how you react to those. And I email people back very, very quickly because it's on my phone. This is my business. This is my livelihood. Probably a different level than some corporations and businesses. They can't do that all the time. But when I email them back, they're always amazed. They literally say, wow, I can't believe you got back to me. And that boggles my mind because that's what you're supposed to do. So little things like that over time make a big difference. And then continuing to stay in touch with them about what happened and trying to fix that. And of course, time. It does take time to build that. You have to build credibility. You have to get people on your side. My goal was not to make money. My goal was to establish myself in this industry, in this hobby, and align myself with Panini and Topps and people like Ty and respected individuals that help build your credibility. And then just do what you're the best at. Just do what you're good at. Trust yourself and do it. And everything else should fall into place after that. And a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, look, I think that's also spot on, right? It's communication and it's responsiveness and you know, just when things occur, which are not going to be always pleasant, right? I mean, it certainly happened to us. We've had some, you know, real highs, and obviously, you know, from a trust standpoint, that there were concerns about collectible recently, right? And you know, we came out and we fully addressed them. We were fully transparent. We were responsive, and we sort of told our side of the story. And you know, I think ultimately, when it comes to trust, you know, it's also hiring really good people, right? Hiring people who sort of live the morals and the values of the company that you're trying to create, right? And to make sure that, yeah, I mean, we can't always control how the market's going to react to what Collectible does or what any company does for that matter. We can just control what our intentions are going into it, and knowing that, you know, we always prioritize transparency and honesty. And you know, and again, when stuff occurs, just to communicate and to be responsive and transparent, I think that's all you can really do.
Yeah, if you just do what you say you're going to do, that goes a very long way. If I say, hey, I'm going to send you this because of that, they're going to be waiting for that item. They're going to be waiting for that refund. They're going to be waiting for that credit. And if you don't do that and a couple days go by and they have to email you back and say, hey, dude, I was supposed to get a credit for this break, or you were going to send me this box because of this or that, or whatever it may be. You have to follow through and do what you say you're going to do. That's a pretty general rule, but you just do that and build your business off that.
100%. Yep. Ditto. Everything the two of them said. Seriously, spot on. For us, we just focus like customer comes first. In every single scenario, it's all about the customer. And I think, you know, communication is probably the biggest piece. And as Chris said, like, if you communicate and if you're consistent, you know, just consistency, just then, you know, things, you know, tend to work out. And so I think as long as you have the customer in mind and you're communicating with them and you're being straightforward and you have good intentions, as Ezra said, you know, those are probably the keys.
Mm-hmm. Ezra, I have a question for you and you too, Scott. Do you have to have a lot of daily communication with your customers, your investors? Is that a kind of daily communication, or are they just lock in and it's kind of just acquiring new shares every day, or people, customers? Like, what is your day-to-day operation like with people?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of, you know, sort of people who rely on Collectible, who use Collectible. I mean, we have 40,000 plus users at the moment, who check our app almost every single day, and who've invested money with us, and the prices, you know, that, you know, that they've invested, you know, fluctuate in value, and that comes with its own, you know, sort of host of questions. And then we're doing new IPOs, you know, on a fairly regular basis, and we're consigning new stuff every, you know, on a daily basis. We're discussing our business constantly with regulators. We're discussing it with our attorneys. I mean, there's a lot of communication which has to go on in Collectible, and we're a small team. We're a small growing team. So, yeah, it is something that, you know, we're always doing. We'll always continue. I hope we always continue to do, of course. And I also fully expect that we'll get better at it. Mm-hmm. I by no means think that we've cracked the code completely and aced the exam, and we're only, you know, sort of 9 months into our journey. And I hope it's just an area of continued improvement for Collectible.
Yeah, if you build a good team, right, Ty, you got to have the staff, you got to have the manpower. I think it goes without saying in the hobby, there's a lot of negativity of people not getting answers quickly on certain things, and I can't figure out, quite frankly, how some of these corporations aren't staffed enough to handle all of these questions and concerns. And that's frustrating to me as a customer and a consumer as well. There has to be a department built and put the money into that and invest in a larger team to take care of all these questions that customers have. You can't rely on a team of six to run a multi-billion dollar company customer service department type thing. So I'm sure as you guys grow, Scott and Ezra, you're gonna see that, and you're gonna have to balance that as it rises with your team, customer service department, probably.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We get, I think, several hundred customer emails and phone calls every single day. And so, you know, it's an area that we've really focused a lot on, like, building up. But, you know, at the end of the day, as a CEO, you have to prioritize your customer support team just as much as you prioritize marketing, mm-hmm. you know, or business development, or, you know, anything else that you have. It's the most important part of your business. These are the interactions that you're having firsthand directly with your customers. And it's not only, you know, about, you know, servicing them and helping them when they have issues, but it's also a great opportunity for a business to learn about their needs and to learn about areas that you can improve on. And so I think it's something that we try to really focus on but I think we have a ton that we can still improve on, you know, our customer support side of things. But it's one of the more fun parts of the business, kind of going through our support tickets, seeing what people are asking about, seeing what people are complaining about, you know, see the occasional email you'll get when people tell you you're doing something right. Say it's like maybe 1% of the time. But that's the easiest way for at least for us to identify what we should be focusing on. So when we go through our product board and we're trying to decide, all right, what features should we build next? What, you know, what features should we work on enhancing? Like where do we need to focus our time on? We go to, you know, our customer support tickets. We go to our DMs that we get on Instagram or Twitter. We go to the voicemails that are left, you know, on our support hotline number. And that's usually the easiest place to identify these things.
Yep. Good stuff.
We were talking about this yesterday. I had a couple car shop owners on, and their comment was that the hardest thing for them to deal with is hiring in the hobby. Because my point was, surely it's becoming easier, right? The hobby is exploding and so many people are interested in the hobby. And their response to that is more people are interested. There's just so much more trust. There's so many more trust issues, like theft and things because mm-hmm. of cards. And are you guys finding hiring to be easier than you thought or harder than you thought? Or what's kind of your thought on hiring right now?
I mean, so it's tough, you know, it's tough, you know, finding the right people. But at least for us, we try to be selective, you know, mostly, for us, we want to find people that are really passionate about cards and want to work hard. And if they are passionate and kind of believe what we're building and they're motivated and they want to work hard, then, those people typically will find an area within our business where they could be successful. So it's always been hard for us just because you want to, especially as you scale up a business, as Chris said earlier, you know, the people that you hire are the people that are, you know, executing on your vision, and they're the people that are making everything happen. And so it's really important that you have the people that have the right personalities, the right vision, you know, on your team.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah. You know, I think we certainly, you know, we've definitely hired a lot of people who have, you know, sort of industry specific knowledge, who, you know, who know cards, you know, memorabilia, but, you know, for our business is different, right? I mean, our business is almost sort of a financial services business, which happens to, you know, play in this world of collectibles, right? So for us, a lot of our hires are on the compliance side, or on the broker dealer side, or, you know, on the product side for sure. I mean, we're aggressively hiring, you know, for product as well, right? So yeah, I mean, we've definitely, you know, sort of made some errors with hiring, but overall, I think we have an amazing team, and you know, I think this industry certainly has become sexier, right, for lack of a better term. I mean, there's more interest in working in a company that is in collectibles or in sports cars, just because you've heard a lot about it, and there's a lot of, you know, big brands getting into it and big companies that are coming into it, right? So I think when you say, you know, it's a sports collectibles company, what might have been skepticism probably 12 months ago, 18 months ago, is now something where I think there's a lot of mainstream acknowledgement that it's something that is exciting and a real area of growth.
Mm-hmm. The problem I have is trying to find that person, which they do exist. If you cast your net in the proper places in the right times and in areas, you'll find somebody. But the problem I have here is time. So I have to find somebody who is going to leave their job potentially. And I've made these offers out there. They don't want to leave their full-time job that they went to school for and to college for to leave and come work at a card shop. It's kind of difficult for them to do it. And I tell them, look at this as a general manager's position in a business. But they see the card shop and the hobby and the fun, and it's tough. It's a tough sell to a lot of people because you can find part-timers here and there to help fill in and fill the gaps. But, you know, like you were saying, you want somebody who's going to grow with you over the years and over time. And so I'm still kind of got my ears open for that one full-time person, additional full-time guy. It's going to help me more run the business side. I can have guys in the front of the shop, front of the house, sorting breaks, packing, shipping, but I am in the need of perhaps like a general manager type that I can pass off some of my duties that I do, and I can work on scaling the business, other locations, and things like that. Yeah. So,
Chris, I told you I'm not interested. You don't have to keep pushing me.
Yeah, that was a secret call to you, Ty. Bring those six kids and wife on down.
That's right. We'll do everything for you. You guys, good sources of candidates. It's a question from Alan here. What's a good spot you're finding buyers from?
We find ours all over the place. And we've hired a few people from Instagram and Facebook and people that have reached out to us on social. Those are people that are passionate about the hobby, and you know, also when someone's willing to reach out and send you a cold message and ask you for their dream job, that's obviously flattering as the business owner, and those are the types of people that you want to bring in, people that are kind of go-getters and are passionate about the space. And so I know that we've hired, I'd say, like at least, you know, 3 to 5 people directly off of Instagram. We've put up posts in the past that we've been looking for people to come join our operations team or our marketing team. And we've had a lot of people, send us emails and reference their Instagram handle and things like that. And so, so much of the hobby is done on social media. And so it has been a pretty good place for us to find talent.
That makes me, I don't know. I'm more of a kind of opening up to the universe and kind of meeting through other people in the market, in the area. I thought about posting ads. I thought about, you know, putting it out there and really looking for help. I can manage it right now with the staff that I have, speaking for myself, but as soon as I can get Ty to come down here from Kansas City, that's a whole different story here.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we'll be good to go.
Ezra, you got me thinking. You just made a comment a few minutes ago just about how now it's okay to talk about sports cards, but 12 months ago it was kind of awkward. And I'm still thinking back 2 years ago when family members or friends would ask, hey, what do you do part-time for fun? Like sports card podcast, blog? And it's kind of like chuckle, chuckle. Now it's like, whoa, no way. You must have cool cards and connections. Mm-hmm. It's funny how fast the mindset of sports cards has changed. Incredible. Talk a little bit about the market as a whole right now. We have 10 minutes left. There's been a massive pullback the last few months. Kind of what's your perspective going forward in the sports card world from your guys' angle?
Yeah, I mean, I think we at Collectible remain incredibly bullish on the future of the industry. I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, look, there obviously has been a pullback in the last quarter, but if you zoom out past the last quarter, I mean, things are up dramatically over the last year. And, you know, I think we've always said, and I think all of us would agree that this is a marketplace like anything else. Things go up, things go down, but, you know, underneath the surface, there's just a tremendous amount of innovation occurring in this industry. There's a tremendous amount of widespread mainstream acceptance, mainstream content coverage, just a tremendous amount of capital coming into it. I mean, look, you know, a firm like Blackstone investing in this industry was something that probably a couple of years ago would have been almost unheard of, right? So, you know, I think there's just the fundamentals under the surface of short-term price movement. the fundamentals of the industry probably have never been stronger. And so we remain incredibly bullish on this. I mean, you can look at companies like StarStock or Collectible, right, or other amazing companies out there. That I think it's just an industry that has become, you know, obviously it's been a multi-billion-dollar industry, almost in spite of a lot of the sort of structural frictions that it's had, which to me says to me that this is an incredible hobby, an incredible industry filled with passion that people can also feel like there's great people in it. It's a sense of community and, you know, a sense of nostalgia and belonging and all that sort of emotive stuff. But it's also a way to speculate on sports, right? It's probably that third. I always use this phrase, third head monster. My compliance guy hates it, but I'll say it again. You know, it's a third head monster, I believe, to fantasy sports and sports gambling. And I think it's an unbelievable way to participate in sports. So, you know, we remain incredibly bullish on it. And I think, you know, the vacillation in prices just confirms that it's a marketplace like anything else, right? But I also think, you know, in the area of the market which we play, at the high end of the industry, I mean, there really hasn't been that much of a pullback. You're seeing record, you know, prices with the Steph Curry card going for almost $6 million. You know, our Babe Ruth card, I mean, a Mantle PSA 8, an 8 went for over $2 million yesterday, or an 8 went for over $2 million, right? So, you know, at the upper end of the industry where there's just a tremendous degree of scarcity, there really has not been that much of a pullback at all. So, again, we remain incredibly bullish about what the future has in store.
Yeah, absolutely, as do we. And I think he brings up a great point. Like, it's a market, you know, prices are going to go up, prices are going to go down. It's a good thing for them to go down. You know, it's not necessarily good when prices are going up for forever. It's just unsustainable. And I think another thing that's promising as well is people are more educated than they were 2 years ago. And I think that's something that, you know, companies like, you know, like Collectible, StarStock, a bunch of, you know, Breaker Culture, you know, media companies, card shops, marketplaces, all of us have been spending a lot of time and effort on educating people on the ins and outs of the hobby, whether it's, you know, finding, you know, pricing transparency, or educating people on, you know, sets that they should be buying, things like that. And I think we see it on our end, just the overall education level of collectors now, it's night and day compared to where we were 2 years ago. And I think it's created like a much more efficient market. And so I think that's good for everybody.
It is. Agreed.
Incredible feedback.
Yep.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I mean, technology has a big part of this over the last few years that has put a lot of eyes on the hobby and on cards, memorabilia, things like that. I'm just amazed by the technology that has been implemented, whether it be for breaking, whether it be for investing, fractional investing platforms and things like you guys are doing. That just shows that this is a market and they are businesses, but it's also a hobby. So if you're going to wake up each day, why not go to work and make an income and make a living doing something you love and you're happy about doing? And I think sometimes people get lost in the money of all of this, but at the end of the day, nobody gets mad when the Deadliest Catch fishermen haul in big tanks full of crab, you know? So we're going to also have a livelihood and we're going to support our families and make money and we're going to have fun doing it and make it available to the consumer. So it's a very good time. And it's only, in my opinion, going to get bigger and better as the years go on here. As technology gets bigger, better, faster, more people come into the market, it is a good, fun time.
Yep. Look at the card shop behind you. Like when I was growing up, you know, we had a card shop, Ezra might know it, in New Rochelle called Squiggies. I love Squiggies. You know,
won't
say anything bad about Squiggies, but like, you know, even the experience that you get when you walk into a card shop now, it's not about buying a card or a box of cards and leaving. Like I go to the card shop so I can go and like chat and shoot the shit with the owner of the shop for 30 mm-hmm. minutes to an hour. And you have these shops where like you can see behind Chris the stools, like these are lounges, these are clubs now. Like there's a community in this space that just, it didn't seem like it was the same, you know, 10, 15 years ago, at least for me when I was a younger kid. And so I'm just, it's so exciting. And I'm, I'm very excited to get to National in a couple weeks and you know, have an opportunity to meet with all these people, especially with COVID, you know, a lot of us, you know, having online relationships and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I think the hobby's in such a great place right now.
Agreed. We have a couple minutes and it looks like folks just appreciate your guys' transparency. I've always appreciated both your guys' transparency. Chris, you're semi-transparent. When you guys, Scott and Ezra, when you look at technology, and you mentioned it here, just the tremendous innovation taking place, what kind of technological innovation has you most excited over the next 12 to 18 months? Anything stand out to you that you're really excited to see kind of evolve and develop in the hobby?
I think for us, really, it's just, you know, it's just breaking down barriers to entry, right? I mean, I think, and Scott would probably agree. I mean, it's been, unfortunately, it's an amazing experience collecting and investing, you know, in collectibles, but it's also been a pretty frictionful journey. It's not easy to do, right? So just the ability for technology to reduce frictions. I mean, you can look at other marketplaces and other industries, and, you know, that's been a pretty powerful formula. When you can make it easier and open up the market for, you know, hundreds of thousands, hopefully millions of participants, it just brings a lot more attention and eyeballs and demand and interest and all that stuff. So, you know, I just think it, just as a sort of an overarching theme, technology will make this industry a lot easier to participate in and with. I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the barrier to entry is a really good point. Just how can you enable more people that are big sports fans to be able to buy cards? You know, you don't need to be a, you know, sports card nut like the four of us are to want a rookie card of your favorite player. And so how can we enable those people that are huge sports fans, you know, huge Shohei Ohtani fans, to be able to buy the right card or buy a fraction of the right card, and to feel confident about it, and to make, you know, feel confident that they're not getting ripped off, and that they're, you know, making a solid investment.
Yeah, that's good. I feel like when we think about keeping this new generation of collectors ingrained in the hobby, let's remove the barrier of entry, because I feel like it's all frictionless now. Everything we do is frictionless. That's the only way we're going to keep these guys in. All right, let's end with a question that I think Global Sports Card Investor asked, and it was something I wanted to ask you guys anyway. What are your holy grail cards for you personally? What's the card that you're trying to go get and add to your collection right now? And by the way, before you answer that, following me is Filmington. So go to Filmington's channel for episode at right after this. So but I'll let you guys start. Maybe Chris, start with your holy grail card. What's the card you want?
How did I know you were to come to me for that, man? I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not a big singles collector. A lot of people think because I have a shop and been doing this for many years, I'm a big collector of cards. I did have a Holy Grail piece in here. I have some Michael Jordan's, not game used, but I got a pair of Michael Jordan autographed sneakers here, which I'm pretty excited about. But I would love to have, I mean, I want to have the Michael Jordan 86 Fleer card. I know that's a standard default answer, but, you know, I don't know how I'm going to get one of those. But that would be something to keep forever and pass on to my kids and family, so. I'll just go default with that bad boy there.
Ezra has a good idea how you can get one.
Yeah, I know that.
You know, if you buy at 3 o'clock, you can buy shares for as little as $25.
There you go.
Actually, our Jordan PSA 10 86 Fleer closed Friday at $250,000. One just sold at Gold and over the weekend for $270,000. And there's one at PWCC, which is already over $300,000. So probably not the worst time to.
That is great. And that was not planned. I've never met Ezra in person. That was just me being talking. Now, do you have some good Henry Owens cards? Yeah, you're welcome. It was a softball, but it was not intended. But there you go.
Ezra, didn't you guys IPO a Logo Man, Carmelo, and LeBron card?
A duel, yeah.
All right. That's my grill. I want to buy it off of Collectible in 15 years if everything, you know. That I'd say that's probably the coolest.
Yeah, it's such a cool card. It's a one of one dual Logo Man of LeBron and Carmelo. I think that was like a $1 million IPO.
Wow! What in the name?
Yeah, I mean, so you know, with collectible, you're able to kind of dream big here with your aspirational cards. I mean, one of mine, which I'm obviously very biased about, but I think our Baltimore News Babe Ruth card coming up is just spectacular. It's one of those cards that it just never comes up. I mean, one hasn't seen the light of day in over 10 years. We're offering shares of that on collectible, and then the other one which I saw on the news today, right, is that Mantle 52 PSA 10. From Fogles, right? I mean, his PSA 10, 52, I mean, that's an absolute monster. That's probably in the 20s of millions of dollars. And that's just an unbelievable Holy Grail card, obviously, which would be incredible just to have a fraction of.
Yeah, to say the least. Ty has a high collection of Henry Owens cards. He's got a bunch of super fractors. I mean, that's his world.
Well, you can see all these. Those are all my Otani rookies up there. I just pulled them out of my box before we moved. And I got to start getting those figured out. But just so you guys know, my Holy Grail card is the 2018-19 Prism Black 1/1 Michael Porter Jr. So if you come across it.
Huh. MPJ, huh?
Oh, yeah. Mizzou.
Where is it? It just doesn't exist, right? You can't find it. It's not. You search.
I know. I haven't seen it. So, and I'm sure it's not going to pop out until that ungodly moment.
Could be in a box somewhere still.
Probably is.
Yep. It's in a pack.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you so much. Starstock.com, collectible.com, topshelfbreaks.com, right? Is it Top Shelf or Top Shelf Breaks?
It's topshelfbreaks.com and topshelfsportscards.com, but that's under construction for the National. So, yeah.
Cool. We'll see all three of you in Chicago. Hopefully we'll see you, Ezra, in Chicago.
Yes, Ezra. Right. Castor oil. Get that castor oil out.
I'm buying it right now, guys.
That's right.
Thanks, all.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
See ya.